Well, one thing I can say with some level of certainty is that giving for churches has radically shifted in just the last 10 years. But what's working well and what isn't? Well, we wanted to do a ranking for you guys to talk about the hottest trends in giving for churches. Let's talk about it. You're listening to the Reach Right podcast, the show dedicated to helping your church reach more people and grow. Well, hey guys, I'm Thomas.
And I'm Ian.
And today we are ranking some of the top online or giving trends in general that churches are using here in 2024. I think it should be a good conversation.
Yeah, real good. This is obviously a hot topic, I think, for every church.
Yeah,
so absolutely. It should be of interest for sure.
I immediately jumped in my intro to online giving because I think there's going to be a skew towards that because that's where most of the trends are. My church has found that about 75% of our income comes in online versus 25% that's put into a plate or a bucket. So obviously it's really important now and should be a good conversation for us.
Yeah, absolutely. 90% at mine. We have you beat by 20%.
That's what really at least the reports are. 90% comes in online?
That is what our staff has openly said from the pulpit. Yes. So,
that's incredible.
And 90%. So not sure if that's just because we are a larger church or the area demographic. There's a lot of factors, right, that go into it. But that number surprised me. It did.
Yeah, that's really high. I think it could be just we haven't done a fantastic job yet, and we're moving towards this of speaking to online giving. And we've kind of like, so we're really trying to up our game there a little bit. I expect that number will grow. That's kind of like we accidentally backed our way into 75% or so. Something to look
at. That's still a lot.
So here's the challenge today, Ian, is we're going to go through, and I'll let you kind of share the idea and topic, but we're going to go through and rate opinions on certain online or digital or non-digital giving trends that we're seeing, and more like kind of giving practices that we're seeing out there. And we're going to rate them. I think we have like a kind of a scale that we created.
We are.
I'll let you share what it is. What is our rating scale?
It's going to be fun. We have first our top tithers. Tried and true ways of giving. We have also then the next one, which is kind of good, but not the best, which would be solid supporters. Good strategies, but again, not the best. And then lastly, we have the rating of hopeful helpers. This is kind of a new, unproven thing that we still kind of need data to see if what the results are for it.
That's it. So it should be fun. We'll give each one of these 9 or 10, I guess 10 different trends. We'll give them each a rating, and we will let's dive into it.
Let me kick it off and ask you about this first one, Thomas, which this is cash or check.
So that's an interesting one to start with, right? So it's like, here's, I guess, my thought on it. It's a standard way to give. I imagine there's people that are doing it already. Is there potential for growth in this area in your church? Is it a place I would be investing in and trying to build up more people and giving via cash and check? My answer to that would be not really. Some churches think that's a good idea because it is the least expensive way to receive money from people. Like people literally placing cash into a bucket. It has really
no transaction
costs. I would challenge you, like as someone who is an executive pastor at my church, I watch our tithe counting team. There is a cost to that. Like every check and credit and cash transaction, it takes time and processing and trips to the bank and logging and those things. Whereas other forms of giving are much more efficient in the time that it takes. It just gets moved automatically. In most cases, it'll get put right into your church management software. So don't forget those costs. And sometimes the 2% or 3%, whatever it would be that you're paying for a digital transaction might be worth it, especially on smaller transactions, I would say. So, but to give kind of the rating system, I would say cash is a solid, and checks are solid supporters, I think, is
there
what I would say for that. It's about, obviously, we're not turning away cash and checks.
Good, but not great.
But it's not something I guess I would put a lot of focus on. Like, so if I'm writing an email or even giving announcements or things at church, I'm focusing more on other giving methods than talking mostly about cash and check offerings, I'd say.
Agreed. Good point. So next one, online giving.
Okay. So that's the opposite end of the spectrum. And this right. is broad, right? So what we yeah. mean by right. online giving is a big question. But as a general principle of online giving, I think this is at the top tier, a top tither is what yeah. we would put for this ranking here. I think yeah. I think you were just telling me earlier today that you're still encountering like 10% of churches that are not yet set up with online giving. And that's just amazing to me. Because
be close
I think,
to that. Maybe, yeah, it may be a little less. I'd say yeah. 10% out of all the ones I talked to in a given year. Maybe.
So I remember clearly during the first days of the pandemic,
right.
We had a blog post on our site, reachrightstudios.com. We have a blog that gets a lot of traffic on there. And we were one of the top posts for online giving providers for churches. And we kind of recommended yeah. a handful of them. My yeah. goodness, it was incredible to look at our Google Trends and our like yeah. our analytics accounts. And we see that like we were chugging along at maybe like 100, you know, maybe 75 to 100 clicks a day on this one post. And right yeah. then, like right when the, like over a 3-day period, it went from 100 to like 4,000 clicks every single day of all these churches saying, oh no, we're not going to have service for a few weeks. What are we going to do? We have to yeah. have something online giving yeah. related. And so we saw this enormous spike in churches doing that
there
then,
was.
But I just thought everybody got on it then. So yeah, yeah. It's a top tither. Online giving, if you're not doing it, you need to do it.
Yeah.
You need to get over any aversion you have because you feel like it's not as spiritual. It can yeah. be, I think. And so it's something that it's really without question. Now you have to do it.
And last thing I'll say, when I say it's 10%, it might be a little less. It might be 8 or something. But the point is the churches that I find that do not have online giving are usually, it's a very older church that's almost dying away, very small, rural. Those usually fit that guy. Now there's an anomaly. Sometimes I'll get a 300 member church that's doing a lot of outreach that just doesn't do it, but that's rare.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah. So, well, good. This next one, cryptocurrency, a big topic.
Yeah.
I know one topic you've been fond of lately here. So
yeah, absolutely. Now I'm cautious because like whenever we talk about crypto, we released a video a couple of weeks ago
yeah.
About my church's kind of dabbling into that. And it did very poorly. Yeah. Because I think the algorithms stack against you when you talk about cryptocurrency. There's so many scams out there with everything.
Yeah.
So I will do my best to not lead you astray or scam you with any of this information here. Cryptocurrency, I think, is an interesting opportunity. We just received our first crypto gift at our church. It was a larger gift. Here's the thing about it is that when people are giving something like this, an asset like cryptocurrency, because it's gone up so much in the last few years, there's a lot of people, like if you bought Bitcoin 5 years ago, you probably bought it at around $3,000 per coin. And today, like at this recording, it's like $75,000 per coin.
Yeah.
So if let's even say just for round numbers, you bought it at $5 and it's worth $75 now. If you were to sell that and then take the proceeds, the cash from that, and give it to the church, you would have to pay capital gains taxes on all of that profit there. So if you had one Bitcoin, you would be paying capital gains tax on $70,000. And for most of us, it's going to be like most of it's like a 15% long-term capital gains rate is what you'll pay on that. So to give that to the church, you would have to pay a 15% fee to the government, and then you could give those funds to the church and get your tax deduction because it's a charitable donation. Alternatively, the idea that we had is if someone just gave the cryptocurrency directly to our church, whether it's Bitcoin or Solana or something else like that, then they wouldn't have to pay capital gains, and the church could then liquidate it. And because the church is tax exempt, pay no capital gains on that. And the person still gets the fair market value of the cryptocurrency as a donation that they save a ton of money on. So long story short, people save between 15 to 20% on their appreciation they have on these things. And for someone that has been in crypto for a long time, that could be a lot of money that someone saves.
Yeah.
With this. So total no-brainer for us. We sign on with a company that helps us do it. We can process lots of different kinds of cryptocurrencies that are out there. And we got our first donation. It was really cool to see that come in. It was like in our, it was given, liquidated. So what basically our church decided we're not going to hold on to Bitcoin or something else when someone gives it to us. We sell it immediately and then turn it into cash. It was in our account in a couple of minutes. It's like a super fast transaction, really cool stuff that happens. So for me, I say all these positive things. I'm not totally convinced yet that it's going to have the volume of people.
Right.
Although all the stats seem to show that more people than we think are using cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Like we had a stat from the episode we did. It was about 40% of people own some kind of currency in the U.S., cryptocurrency. So, but I'm still not convinced. It's still in its infancy. So I'm still going to put a solid supporter ranking on this one. Because I just don't think that everybody, I think I would, put like something that everybody is going to use a little bit higher than that. But yeah, solid supporter for sure.
Okay, good. No, and that's good. That's a very strong case for it that you just gave there too, Thomas. So this next one's definitely been popular for a little while, I would say. Text to give.
Okay. So I passionately fought for this back in 2014 or so to really get this at our church, to get text to give. And I thought it was really important at the time. I think it was kind of the newest giving technology. You saw a lot of people doing it for fundraising, for disaster relief types of things. In reality, though, I found that most text to give systems are actually just a way that you text and then you get set up with a system and do a normal online gift on your phone that way. Phone giving has gotten so efficient that I think that text giving, its day has kind of come and gone already. Like the idea of typing in a specific number, whether it's a 10-digit number or a 5-digit, you pay extra for that. Typing in that number, sending in a text to them, the first time you set it up, you have to go through a couple of other steps. In reality, I think it's just easier for people to do a normal gift through their phones on an online giving system, if it's a good system that's actually managed well and it doesn't have a lot of extra fluff in there. So a few years ago, I might have called it a top tither or a solid supporter. Yeah. I think text giving now has come down to a place where I'd say it's maybe the top of the hopeful helpers category, the lowest category.
Our first low category score of the
Would I cancel it right away if I was doing it at my church? Probably not. But I just think that it's less efficient and it uses the same thing that other thing. It uses the phone. So it's like a less efficient way to give by your phone is what it is. So
I think in the last 10 years at my church, I maybe did one. Once use text to give. But you're right. I could do it either over my phone easily through our giving platform or just at home. From my computer. Next one, reoccurring payments.
Yeah, recurring giving. Okay.
Recurring giving would be a better way to put it, right?
Yep. Recurring payments, recurring giving, whatever you want to call it, but encouraging people to get into your online giving system and instead of giving a one-time donation, commit to most systems will allow you to do daily, weekly, every other week, twice a month, monthly.
Right.
I think even quarterly. I don't think any of them allow you to do annual gifts. Just getting this set up. So for me, this is probably the top of the top tithers for me. I think if I was going to give one thing that's probably the most important thing that most churches can do when it comes to taking their online giving and their giving in general to the next level is really having a campaign or a focus on encouraging people towards this. I think it's easier for some people to do it than others. I think for someone that has consistent income, maybe you have a job where your payday is the same every single week or every single month. It's easy for you to set this up because you know you can give a tithe and set it up properly once and for all.
Keeps people disciplined too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So for people like me and you, I know Ian, we have more variable kind of income as business owners and people that help. We own a business, so our income can fluctuate. I still find that it's helpful for me kind of as a baseline. I have mine set up to give the same amount on the first of the month every single month. And so it's really good and convenient for people that are committed members of churches and know they're called and believe in giving a tithe to their church. It just makes it such a no-brainer, I feel like. So it's so good. For the church, it's amazing because those are funds that barring any major event or something radical happening, you can almost plan on coming in every single month. So I would absolutely embrace this. I would talk about this as much as you talk about giving cash and checks or online giving. Every time I talk about giving, I would talk about setting up a recurring payment, at least just mention it in passing. And when I talk about a giving sermon or something, I would absolutely encourage people to be thinking about these kinds of things and encourage them to be like kind of the main way that we encourage members of our church to give. So top of the top tithers for me.
All right. Top tithers leading the way so far with what we've given to each one of these. Next one, pledge campaigns.
Okay, a pledge campaign. So usually what we're talking about with this is a campaign. We see it most commonly with things like buildings, right? So
like a new building,
are doing a big building or some kind of a land acquisition, and you need a large sum of money. And so you cast vision, and you know that you need people to give more than they have in their pockets or maybe even their in their bank accounts right now. But over the course of a year or 6 months or 3 years, that you feel like maybe people could really be radically generous with this. So yes, I think that they're absolutely important. I think that if you're going to do a building, that is absolutely the way to do it. I've seen it used for other kinds of things too. So maybe there's a big initiative you have at your church where you're going to you know, make a dent in the homeless population. I saw one church recently that has a big focus on paying off people's medical debts. So they raise funds, they have pledge campaigns to build up a big fund where they can go negotiate with a medical company and then just pay off someone's medical debts for them just to be a blessing to them. So awesome stuff that they do. And they did this through pledge campaigns. So very valuable, very logistically heavy. Like, so it takes a lot of logistics in managing it as well as like initiating it. And usually it comes with like a big event or a kickoff, which we may talk about here in the future. So I think that it's a, I've done them. I have done them. I've seen them done well. I have personally failed at them or been at churches that didn't do it very well. And so I know that they can be challenging, especially if you don't hit the goals that you're wanting to hit through the pledge campaign and you have to do a second or third or fourth pledge campaign. It gets pretty challenging. So I have a hard time going all the way to the top. So I'm going to say solid supporter, I think, on this one, on pledge campaigns.
Yeah, no, and I agree with that. My church is actually in the midst of one right now.
What's it called?
Calling it our legacy campaign. So this it's going towards several efforts. We're a multi-campus church. We have a new campus that we're trying to launch. It's also, we have a campus and schools in Africa and Mozambique. And it's kind of going towards all these expansions. And we have a Christian college that our church is actually starting as well. So there's, it's kind of where you can, where's your passion? Where do you want to leave a legacy at our growing churches? Kind of how we're doing that. So my church is in the midst of one, right? That's just one idea. It's often you're right. The building, we did do a new building. We did this. It was very successful for our new building as well. But this is another type of one we're doing right now. So,
hey,
but,
one thing I think we just mentioned, we were going to stick one in here, and I don't think we skipped over the one we were going to stick in. We said we were going to do.
You're right.
Do you remember it?
We said we were going to be doing stock giving. I think we meant to sandwich it between the cryptocurrency as well. So, but yeah.
So, do you want to know what I think about stock giving, Ian?
I do. Yes. you already laid it on thickly for crypto. We know what you think about that. What about stock giving?
Same as crypto, if not even a little bit higher, I think. Because I think that the advantages are almost identical. The capital gains things we talked about, I think that those are the same capital gains savings that people have. I think they're just a lot more people have them, have stock as opposed to cryptocurrency. Almost everybody in your church probably, well, maybe not almost everybody, but everybody who's of a certain age, most of them probably do. So I think, and they're more aware of that. They have it in their portfolios and those things. So to me, it's more easier to talk about. People understand it better. The downside is it's a little bit harder to give. Like there's not really anything that is truly seamless. Our church just started doing it. We just got our first ever stock donation at our church and with our new system that we're using. And it was for some shares of NVIDIA stock, which is really cool. It's gone up a lot. Perfect use case for something like this. It takes a few days for people to usually get through the steps they have to do and link up their accounts and do some of that kind of stuff with their brokerage. For that one, I'm going to say, yeah, I think just it's a top tither for me. I think it's something every church should do just because there's so many opportunities here. And I think there's potential for very large donations to come in that way. If someone's been sitting on some of their own company stock, if you have someone that maybe works for a big tech company or something, a lot of times they're given stock as part of their compensation. And if they can find a way to give that, I think it's just really great opportunities for enormous gifts that way. So that's a top tither for me, just because it's so accessible.
I'm very interested about this next one here. Donor galas, or galas is the other way to...
I think it's galas in Hawaii.
I've heard a lot of people say gala. And the reason I said that is I was working with a ministry the other day that they needed to wait to schedule an appointment with me because they had a donor gala that they were putting on. I don't hear that often. But I'm glad we're talking about it today. So your thoughts there, Thomas?
I like the idea. So here's what I'm the most common version of this now. So there's the campaign driven ones, which I think usually that's how they're best, is when they're tied to some kind of a campaign. What I have seen a movement towards that I have to be, if I'm being completely honest, I'm not set on this yet. Like, so the idea is that you would have a really big gala, an event, that is probably really a nice type of thing. People get dressed up nice. The food is really nice. You may pay a lot of money to cater it, and you may be doing it at an outside place, not at your church facility. Here's the part where it rubs me. Like, I have some questions. Is that you invite people that are on the higher end of the givers at your church. So it would be maybe use a threshold. Maybe it's top 10% of givers in your church. If you're a church of 200 people, or maybe that would be too small for that size church. Yeah. You would maybe if your church of 500, you'd invite the 50 biggest givers in your church to come to something like this. I have some biblical conviction on that I'm having a hard time getting over.
Yeah.
Like just, you know, where that sits with me. I totally see the advantage. I know that's exactly how non-faith-based or non-church nonprofits would do it. If I was running a crisis pregnancy center or something like that, no brainer, I would totally do something like this. But I'm just nervous about that, how I justify saying that these 20% of people that have given the most are welcome.
Yeah.
And then maybe these others, you know, it's not really for you. Now, like, I think that if you are someone that is not a big giver, you might not be interested in something like this because people should know what it's about, that we're going to ask you for money as a result of this for whatever our campaign is. But that's one of the mixed feelings I have about this. I've never personally hosted or done one. I know that the church I pastor at has done them in the past. We're playing with some of these ideas. I'm going to rate it a solid supporter, kind of in the middle right now. But I want to know in the comments if anybody out there does them and what your feelings are about them. Is it okay? Do you feel like you shouldn't do them? Have you had a lot of success? How do you get over maybe some of those feelings and convictions? Let me know down in the comments. What do you think, Ian?
I agree with you, Thomas. I think it's tough to... I haven't heard of these, but I do agree, like, if you... It can get a little sticky when... like inviting the top givers and all of that.
Went to one at your church before. Weren't you invited to
I don't know. That came to mind when you were saying that, so maybe why you asked me. But it wasn't... I don't know the criteria they used. I don't know if it was just regular givers, if it was, people that they knew were tithing, or... but it was definitely...
It was almost certainly some threshold. I don't know what it is.
Yes, it
could be the top 90%. Indeed, I don't know, but like...
Indeed it was. And it didn't come off... They were very tactful. When this happened, but it didn't come off the wrong way. To me personally, however, I'll put it to you this way. I wouldn't want to be making the decision and that call as a pastor or ministry leader. So to have one. And that's it. So we'll get this next one. I don't even know if I'm saying this right, Thomas. DAF giving, D-A-F giving.
Yep. You got it. So let me try and give you a rundown of what this is. So a DAF is a donor advised fund. So what that is it's something that you can set up as an individual in your own brokerage account that basically it's like your own, it functions almost like its own little nonprofit that you can give your money to and put it into a special kind of a brokerage account and get your tax write-offs and everything for it. And then you could let that grow and then give it to organizations or churches or those things as you see fit. So it's basically setting up your own little endowment, I guess, a small endowment you could use for giving to philanthropic causes. So churches are a great source that you could give that. And so the idea is that if you want to, if you have someone in your church that has a DAF set up, you want to make it easy for them to be one of the organizations they select to give from that DAF to. Like, so that's the idea behind it. Here's what I found. We are doing this at our church. We've never received one, but it's only been a few months. I imagine that 95% of the population, at least, Ian, is in the exact same camp as you. They don't know what that is. Right. Let me know. Did you guys know before this what a DAF was? Let me know on that in the comments too.
We'd like to know.
So I think it's really a great opportunity. And I imagine anybody that has a DAF probably has, they're probably philanthropic in their attitude and nature. They probably could expect relatively large gifts from a DAF if someone has that set up. But because it's such a small portion of the population that has one, I don't know. Like, I think it's one of those things
hopeful
like
helper, hopeful helper.
What do you think? Would you? I was going to go solid supporter. I know we do a lot in the middle.
I'd say because the lack of knowledge, I would go there.
The lack of, but that's the thing is that like, well, very few are aware of it. Those that are, like, I think they probably give more than the vast majority of people in your church. So I'd probably bump it up to the bottom, I guess, of the solid supporters, but right in that range there,
They're on the bottom of the pile of solid supporters. There you go. Okay, good. So this next one we know about, church app giving.
I am generally done with it. I don't really think that it's... So my philosophy is churches shouldn't really have apps because we've done whole episodes on why your church doesn't need an app unless you are a very, very large church. You just don't have the volume of people. And this is something that really your website, if it's mobile designed right for mobile devices, it should function just fine. And really the app giving experience is really the same thing as what should be on your website. So I think save yourself the hassle of building an app, getting people to download all those things. Just have a good website. I think you'll be better off. So I put that into the hopeful helpers category.
Good. I agree. Nothing much to add there. Email donation campaigns, last but not least.
Yeah. Okay. So this is the idea that you use your church email list to be inviting people to give. I think it's great around seasons like the Giving Tuesday that's coming up here soon for us. That Tuesday right after Thanksgiving there. So great opportunity for that. Around other campaigns, I think you should absolutely, really to me, it's more of a reinforcer for all these other things. I think you should be regularly sending emails, letting people know, hey, set up recurring giving. Do you have cryptocurrency? Hey, you can give that to our church. Do you have stock that's appreciated? Yeah. There's a huge tax benefit if you give it to our church that way. So you can have some of those conversations, but in my mind, it's more of a support tool to other campaigns and other pushes that you're doing. And it should be part of every online giving strategy. So solid supporter is where I put that one.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So, well, that was a lot. A lot of good content there, hopefully, for folks. And again, DAF giving was new to me as well. So
Awesome. If you guys disagree, let me know. Like, I'd love to hear your thoughts on things. If you've seen a ton of success with text giving or apps, or you haven't seen any success with recurring giving or getting people on there, let us know down in the comments. Hit the subscribe button. Thanks, guys, for being a part of the Reach Right family. And we'll catch you next week.
See you.